Okay.
All right. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
It is 9 o'clock, pretty much right on the dot, and we need to roll because I got 16 pages. Okay? Now, 4 or 5 of that is appendix information that I just gave to you so that you could have it to look at. But we do seriously need to get started. If you would, open your Bible to Acts 12. Open your Bible to Acts chapter 12. Okay? So, this morning, by the way, for those of you that are going to watch this later on and sitting here, the notes you should have in front of you are titled Acts 12:4, Don't Pass Over Easter. You like that? Okay? So there you go. Those of you that thought I couldn't do a pun, you can just remember that next time. But in all seriousness, let's read from Acts 12, verses 1 through 4, and then we'll get into the notes. Acts 12, verse 1. It says here, "Now about this time, Herod the king stretched forth his hand to vex certain of the church, and he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. And because he saw it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to take Peter also. Then were the days of unleavened bread. And when he had appeared unto him, he put him in prison and delivered him to 4 quaternions of soldiers to keep him, intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people." Okay? So you can see right there in verse 4, it says what? It says Easter. Okay? So to the notes. This morning we are going to take a break from our study of preservation into something that I have been wanting to teach on for at least the past 2 years. Our studies on preservation over the past 7 months, since September 2016, have made it known that I am rethinking some of the common messaging used to defend the King James position. Okay? So that's been pretty clear to you, I think, over the last 7 months, those of you that have been part of the class. Okay? Now what I mean by that is how it's explained. Okay? It hasn't been explained well, in my opinion, in a lot of different ways. Okay? So the question of whether or not Easter is an accurate translation of the Greek word Pascha in Acts 12:4 in the King James Bible is in many ways a microcosm of the larger discussion we have been engaged in over the past 7 months. So while this is a bit of a digression from what we've been talking about, it is certainly not wholly unrelated from what we've been looking at over the last 7 months. Particularly, this is true particularly as it relates to the subject of verbatim identicality, as you'll see as we unfold this, okay? Critics of the King James in general and King James onlyism specifically have sought to use Acts 12:4 as a case in point to prove that the King James Bible is not inerrant. It is alleged that Easter is a mistranslation of the Greek word Pascha and therefore constitutes an error in the King James Bible. Defenders of the inerrancy of the King James Bible have sought to answer these critics and have put forth arguments for why Easter is not a mistake in Acts 12:4. Okay? Let me just be frank and upfront with you about it. I think everything that I have ever read, seen, or watched on this topic, I think is completely false on both sides. On the anti-King James side and on the King James defense side. Okay? I have read a bunch of material. I've watched about 10 to 15 hours worth of videos of people explaining this. And based upon the research that I have done, I cannot find anybody who I think got it right. Okay? So, just so you know, what I'm about to present to you is a completely different explanation of it than I have heretofore heard ever presented by anybody. Okay? Now, that doesn't automatically obviously make it right, but I think I have some good reasons for thinking what I'm thinking that I intend to explain to you over the next 3 weeks. Okay? So the goal of these studies over the next couple weeks will be to look at both sides of this controversy with a goal of reaching a reasonable and factual conclusion. So in order to accomplish this task, we're going to consider the following points. Okay? Number one, we're going to give a factual consideration of why there's a controversy, okay, to begin with. Second, I'm going to lay out for you a common King James-only defense of Easter in Acts 12:4. Third, we're going to look at, is Easter an exclusively pagan word? Is it exclusively pagan? We're going to look at the etymology of the word. Fourth, we're going to look at Easter in the English Bible, a brief look at the history of translation. And then last, after we've done all that, we'll come back to the passage and give a scriptural exposition of it based upon what we learn in the other 4 points. Okay? So if all goes as planned in this particular lesson, this first lesson, I intend on covering points 1-3. So the factual consideration, the defense of Easter by King James only advocates, and then Easter exclusively pagan are the 3 points that if we get to them all, I will intend to cover in this particular lesson. So let me say, there's a lot to be said. I'm just going to go through it. We're probably not going to have a lot of time for question during the lesson. I'm certainly open to discussion after the fact. And then I'm thinking the last lesson, the third lesson, if there's any questions that are still outstanding, we probably would have time during that third lesson. Remember, I originally said 2 weeks on this and then I adjusted it to 3. Don't make me go 4, okay? So, anyway, in the end, it will be demonstrated. So I'm telling you here what I'm going to attempt to demonstrate, that Easter in Acts 12:4 means Passover, or is a reference to the Jewish feast. Okay? And it is not a reference to a spring pagan festival or a Christian holiday. Okay? So I am going to make the contention to you throughout the next 3 weeks that Easter is a perfectly acceptable English word to say Passover in English. Okay? And I'm going to demonstrate that to you through a variety of different points that we're going to start working our way through. So I don't think Easter is pagan, which sets me apart from the traditional King James only defense. At least that's not what it meant or what they were intending to say in that verse. Okay? Nor do I think it is referring to a Christian festival as some others have argued. Okay? So, let's get into the factual considerations first and understand why there's a controversy. So if you look at the notes there at the bottom of page 1, it says, the Greek word Pascha occurs 29 times in 27 verses. So the controversy is this word here, Pascha. Well, that's not really the controversy. In the King James Bible, that word appears a total of 29 times. Okay? So it appears 29 times in 27 different verses. Okay? Now, that's a fact. That's a fact. With respect to the Textus Receptus that supports the King James Bible, that's a fact with respect to the critical texts that underlie modern versions, okay? So 29 times the Greek word Pascha occurs in the New Testament text. Now, with respect to the King James Bible, 28 of these times, the King James translators, 28 of these times, the King James translators rendered that word as Passover in English. Okay? One time the King James translators render that word what?
Easter.
Okay, and obviously, where does that happen? That happens in Acts 12:4. Okay. Now those are the facts. Okay, no one on either side of that is going to argue with that. Okay, no one on either side of the debate is going to argue how many times it occurs, how many verses it occurs in, and what the King James translators did with respect to it. So of the 29 times, 28 times the King James translator said Passover, and one time they said what? Easter. Okay? Now, let's go back to the notes. So only in Acts 12:4 did the King James translators render the Greek word as Easter in English. Critics of the King James only position routinely point to Acts 12:4 to demonstrate that the King James is not inerrant and contains mistakes. This critical theorizing is fundamentally based upon the following 2 points. Okay? Number one, it is said that the Greek word Pascha always equals Passover in English. Okay? Pascha has never been associated with Easter in English, according to point one. Okay? And this notion is demonstrated by pointing out that modern versions translate Pascha as Passover every time it occurs in the text, including Acts 12:4. So if you go to an NIV, a New King James, a New American Standard, an ESV, all 29 times, it's going to say what? Passover, right? Even in Acts 12:4, they're going to say Passover. And so what contention number one is that this word never meant what? Easter? That it always meant what? Passover. Okay? That's contention number one. Number two, the perceived meaning of the word Easter, parties on both sides of the textual debate view Easter as being pagan in its origin and etymology. This is partly why modern version advocates view Easter as a mistaken translation of Pascha. Meanwhile, King James only apologists admit that Easter is pagan and defend it, according to Acts 12:4, as an appropriate rendering of Pascha in that context. So a King James only advocate is going to say that in Acts 12:4, Pascha is appropriately translated what? Easter. The modern version advocates are going to say there's no justification for doing that, and it should be what every time? Passover. Therefore, that's what? An error, a mistake, or whatever you want to call it, right? Now, you know enough about this whole dialogue so far to know that as soon as somebody says that's a mistake, are the people that defend the King James Bible as an errant, is that going to muster them up to try to justify why that should be what? Easter and not what? And not Passover. Okay, is everybody with that so far? Okay, so the comments of James R. White, in the King James Only controversy regarding the use of Easter in Acts 12:4 by the King James translators are emblematic of the position taken by those who are critical of the King James Bible. Now, let me just say, I could have picked any number of comments to include in the notes here, but I picked his because they were in the most easily accessible book that somebody might have access to on this topic. It wasn't in some remote source that is wholly unknown to most people that are aware of this debate. So, James White says the following in the King James Only controversy. He says, quote, "One might include the KJV's unusual rendering of Acts 12:4 as more of a mistranslation than an ambiguous rendering, and it would be hard to argue against that assertion given the facts." So he's saying that it is miss what? It's a wrong translation is what he's saying. And then he goes on to explain. Okay, now notice what he says. He says the word that the King James Version translates as Easter appears 29 times in the New Testament. That's exactly what I just said. In each of the other 28 instances, the King James translates the phrase as the Passover. For example, John 19:14, "And when the preparation of the Passover was about the sixth hour, he saith unto the Jews, Behold your king." There is no reason for confusion as to what Luke is referring to here. From the preceding verse said, "Then were the days of unleavened bread." The days of unleavened bread, of course, were connected with the Passover celebration. Yet in this one place, the AV contains the anachronistic, now I've told you what that means in parentheses, belonging to a period other than the one portrayed, term Easter. Luke's reference to the days of unleavened bread makes it clear that he is referencing the Jewish holiday season, not a single pagan festival that did not... What was that? So he says he's referring to the whole season and not some pagan festival that did not become known by the specific term Easter for some time to come. So, what is James White is basically saying that the King James translators made a what? Mistake, that they used the wrong word, that the word should have been what? Passover, that they're using an anachronistic word, a word that doesn't appropriately fit the context. In other words, this word came to mean something years later, and it didn't, other than what the understanding would have been in the first century when Luke what? When Luke wrote this and recorded what the events were. Okay? So it is a misuse of terminology. But he is identifying that this word is referring to something that's what? Pagan, right? So let's go back to the notes. So in summation, modern version advocates such as James White view the use of Easter in Acts 12:4 as a translational mistake. Okay? Twice, White refers to Easter as an anachronistic term. Therefore, the Greek word Pascha never meant Easter in English, according to White. Rather, it always meant Passover. Note carefully, however, that White does not dispute the King James only assertion that Easter is a reference to a pagan holiday. Rather, he refutes the notion that Luke is speaking about a pagan holiday in Acts 12:4. Okay? This verse is routinely cited, as I already said, as a proof text against the notion of perfect preservation as it has been defined by most King James advocates, i.e. verbatim identicality. So what we see is the facts, right? So 29 times, 28 times in the King James Passover, one time Easter, one camp says, oh, that's absolutely right. The other one says, that's what? That's wrong, that's a mistake. Okay? So it's important for us to understand why or what line of reasoning is used by those who are going to defend Easter. Okay? So let's go to the next point. King James' only defense of Easter in Acts 12:4. Believers in the inerrancy of the King James... By the way, okay, here's what happens. King James advocates come along and they say the King James is what? Perfect. Right? Inerrant. Right? And then the critics come along and they're trying to find what? They're trying to find a mistake. So they point out different things. One of them is this thing right here, right? And so now that the King James only advocate has this served up to him as a potential mistake, now he's got to try to what? Now he's got to try to figure out a reason how he's going to what? How he's going to justify why it should be Easter there, but nowhere what? Nowhere else, okay? So, believers in the inerrancy of the King James have sought to defend the King James Bible's reading of Pascha in Acts 12 in an effort to rescue their enterprise from critical scrutiny. The classic example of a King James-only defense of Easter in Acts 12:4 can be found in Dr. Samuel Gipp's 1989 publication, The Answer Book. I have a copy right here. This was given to me by a saint at the church, at my dad's church in 1996. When I graduated from high school, okay? So while I have moved on from a lot of what Gipp has to say and no longer buy it, I still keep the book because it's important to me of who gave it to me. But I do have a copy of the book, and what we're going to look at is taken from his explanation of why Easter in Acts 12:4 is not a mistake, okay? So as the title suggests, the answer book is written in a question and answer format, in which Dr. Gipp seeks to answer some of the frequently asked questions regarding King James onlyism. The question and answer regarding Easter comprise the book's second question. So, he says the following. Question. Isn't Easter in Acts 12:4 a mistranslation of the word Pascha, and should it be translated Passover? Answer. No. Pascha is properly translated Easter in Acts 12:4, as the following explanation will show. So he's saying that it should be what? Easter there, not what? Not Passover, okay? So consider the following summation of Dr. Gipp's explanation for why Easter in Acts 12:4 is not a mistranslation on the part of the King James translators, along with some supporting quotations from the answer book, okay? So what I did is I took question number two and I just broke down the main contentions and then supported it on each contention underneath with a citation or a quote from what Gipp says in the answer book. Okay? So, Gipp's first point is that Easter is an ancient pagan holiday connected with the worship of the goddess Astarte and Ishtar. Okay? And he says, quote, coming to the word Easter in God's authorized Bible, they seize upon it, imagining that they have found proof that the Bible is not perfect. Fortunately for lovers of God's Word, they are wrong. Easter, as we know it, comes from the ancient pagan festival of Astarte, also known as Ishtar, pronounced Easter. This festival has always been held in the month of April. It was, in its original form, a celebration of the earth regenerating itself after the winter season. The festival involved a celebration of reproduction. For this reason, the common symbols of Easter festivals were the rabbit, the same symbol as Playboy magazine, and the egg. Both are known for their reproductive abilities. At the center of attention was Astarte, the female deity. She is known in the Bible as the Queen of Heaven. She is the mother of Tammuz, who was also her husband. These perverted rituals would take place at sunrise on Easter morning. For the references in Jeremiah and Ezekiel, we can see that the true Easter has never had any association with Christ. Okay? Problem then on the top of page 4. Even though the Jewish Passover was held in mid-April, the 14th, the pagan festival of Easter was held later the same month. How do we know Herod was referring to Easter in Acts 12:4 and not the Jewish Passover? If he were referring to the Jewish Passover, the translation of Pascha as Easter is incorrect. So, understand, what's Gip saying? He's saying the exact opposite of what I said I was going to prove. He's saying that if it is referring to East, if it is referring to the Jewish festival, then that's what? Wrong. It should have been what? But he's already decided that it's not referring to a Jewish festival, it's referring to what? A pagan festival. Is everybody with that so far? Okay. If he was indeed referring to the pagan holiday, holy day, Easter, then the King James Bible 1611 must truly be the very word and words of God, for it is the only Bible in print today which has the correct what? Read. Now, does everybody understand what Gip's saying? Okay? Let's move on. Passover, his second contention is that Passover occurred. So he's going to explain why this has to be a pagan thing. So he says that Passover occurred on the 14th of the month, and that no event after the 14th is ever referred to as the Passover. So I'm going to draw a little chart here. Okay, so this is the 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st. Okay? And he says, why don't you turn to Exodus 12? We're only going to have time to look at one of these. So what he's saying is that what day is the Passover? He's saying that the Passover is what? The 14th. And he's going to say that from the 15th to the 21st, these are the days of what? Unleavened what?
Bread.
Okay? And his fundamental contention is that only one day, one of these days, is ever referred to in the Scripture as what? Passover. Okay. Now let me explain. Look at. I gotta quit talking and get to the verse. Exodus 12, verse 13. Verse 13. And every firstling of an ass thou shalt redeem with a lamb. Sorry, chapter 12. Yeah. And the blood shall be for you for a token upon your houses where ye are. And when I see the blood, I will what? Pass over you, and the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you, and I will smite the land of Egypt. And then he says, and this day shall be unto you for a memorial, and ye shall keep it a feast unto the Lord throughout your generations. Ye shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. 7 days shall ye eat unleavened bread. Even the first day ye shall put away leaven out of your houses. For whosoever eateth leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off. And in the first day there shall be a holy convocation. And the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation. And he goes on here, right? But go to verse 18. He says, and in the first month, on the 14th day of the month at even, ye shall eat unleavened bread. Where's it talking about killing the sacrifice? Maybe I got the wrong one. So let's try a different one. Go to Deuteronomy 16. Go to Deuteronomy 16. Each one of these is just slightly different. Go to Deuteronomy 16. Maybe I gave up on the other one too quick because I didn't immediately jump out at me what I was looking for. But he says in... He says in Deuteronomy 16, and observe the month of Abida, and keep the Passover unto the Lord thy God. For in the month of Abida, for the Lord thy God brought thee forth out of Egypt by night. Thou shalt therefore sacrifice the Passover unto the Lord thy God of the flock and the herd in the place which the Lord chose to place thy name. Thou shalt eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days shalt thou eat unleavened bread, therewith even the bread of affliction. For thou camest forth out of the land of Egypt in haste. And there shall be no leavened bread seen with thee in all thy coast 7 days. Okay? So the bottom line contention is he's saying that there's only one day in that is described as what? The Passover, and that's what day? The 14th. Starting on the 15th and going all the way to the 21st are what? The days of unleavened bread. Go back to Acts 12 quick. When does Herod arrest Peter? When does Herod arrest Peter? Acts 12:3. Look at the end of Acts 12:3. And because he saw it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to take Peter also. Then were the days of what? So what Gip is basically saying is the following. Okay? Only one day is referred to as what? The Passover. Peter is arrested when? During the days of unleavened bread, which are after what? The Passover. Therefore, Herod keeping Peter in jail in Acts 4 until he keeps him in jail until what? Easter. The pagan what? The pagan celebration, because it can't be referring to the Passover, because the Passover's already what? Has already happened, right? So what he's basically saying is there's only one day that's referred to as the Passover, and every day after that in that past, what is sometimes referred to as the Paschal week, are the days of unleavened bread. Peter is arrested during the days of unleavened bread. The Passover is already over, so therefore he's going to keep him until when? Easter. He's going to keep him in jail until after the pagan festival that Herod would have what? Celebrated as a pagan. That's basically what Gip is saying. Okay, let's go back to the notes. So, Passover occurred on the 14th of the month. No event after the 14th is ever referred to as Passover. And then I gave you the references that he uses to say that. And he says, quote, on the 14th of April, the lamb was killed. This is the Passover. No event following the 14th is ever referred to as what? So he's saying that the days of unleavened bread are never in your Bible referred to as what? Passover. Okay? Look at the next point. So that just kind of piggybacking on what I just said. The days of unleavened bread began on the 15th of the month, the day after Passover. The days of unleavened bread are always after Passover and are never referred to as Passover, according to Gip. So look at the quote. He says, whenever the Passover was kept, it always preceded the Feast of Unleavened Bread. On the morning of the 15th, begins the days of unleavened bread, also known as the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It may also be noted, whenever the Passover is mentioned in the New Testament, the reference is always to the meal to be eaten on the night of April 14th, not the entire week. The days of unleavened bread are never referred to as Passover. Okay? It must be remembered that the angel of the Lord passed over Egypt on one night, not 7 nights in a row. Okay? Peter, next point, I've kind of already said some of this. So Peter is arrested during the days of unleavened bread, which is after Passover. He says, quote, verse 3 shows that Peter was arrested during the days of unleavened bread. That would be the 15th to the 21st. The Bible says, then were the days of unleavened bread. The Passover, April 14th, had already come and gone, according to what Gip is saying. He goes on, therefore, to say, therefore Herod could not possibly have been referring to Passover in Acts 12:4. The next Passover was what? A year away. So, Passover the 14th passes. According to Gip, Peter is arrested during the days of unleavened bread. If he's referring to the Passover, he's going to have to wait a whole what? A whole calendar year until what comes all over again. So Gip therefore says that it cannot be referring to what? Passover. Okay?
So why didn't they use a different treatment?
I'm glad you asked. You have to wait.
Thank you.
Peter was arrested during the day. Okay, I got that. Therefore, Herod cannot possibly have been referring to Passover. The next Passover was a year away. Gip page 7. So, Herod was a pagan who worshipped the Queen of Heaven and had no reason to keep the Jewish Passover. Gipp says, quote, "But the pagan holiday of Easter was just a few days away. Remember, Herod was a pagan who worshipped the Queen of Heaven. He was not a Jew. He had no reason to keep the Jewish Passover." I'll just point out to you, though, does it ever say that he kept it? He just said intending after prison to what? Intending after Easter to what? Okay, he never said Herod's doing anything. The biblical text never said Herod's keeping anything. Okay? It never said that. But anyway, I digress. Herod, next point, Herod did not kill Gipp. Oh man. Freudian slip. Herod did not kill Peter during the days of unleavened bread because he wanted to wait until later in the month after the passing of his own holiday, i.e. Easter. Gipp says, It is elementary to see that Herod, in Acts 12, had arrested Peter during the days of unleavened bread after Passover. The days of unleavened bread would end on the 21st of April. Shortly after that would come Herod's celebration of pagan Easter. Herod had not killed Peter during the days of unleavened bread simply because he wanted to wait until Easter. Since it is plain that both the Jews, Matthew 26, and Romans, Matthew 14, would kill during a religious celebration, Herod's opinion that he was not going to let the Jews have all the fun. He would wait until his own pagan festival and see to it that Peter died in the excitement. So we're going to now set Gipp as Herod executing Peter as part of the Easter pagan festivities. And that's what Herod is intending to do according to what Gipp's explanation is. Okay? So we come to it at last. God's providence led the King James translators to choose Easter in Acts 12:4 given the details of the context. He says, quote, "Thus we see that it was God's providence which had the Spirit-filled translators of our Bible, King James, to correctly translate Pascha as Easter. It most certainly did not refer to the Jewish Passover. In fact, to change it to Passover would confuse the reader and make the truth of the situation unclear." Okay? So finally, Easter, therefore, is not a mistranslation or an error in the King James Bible. The Spirit-filled translators knew that Luke was referring to a pagan festival in this context, and rendered Pascha accordingly. Now, whether you agree, disagree, all I'm asking at this point is, do you understand what he's saying? Okay, do you understand the argument that he's making? Okay, yeah.
So there's two reasons why the King James only people hold to that, right? It's a pagan holiday and Passover, the another separate event.
Yes, but they're connected to each other. The reason they're saying that about Passover is because of how they
define. They'll argue one or the other. Who the person is.
Most of the time, they're combined. Those two ideas are joined at the hip in the argumentation.
Okay.
In almost every case that I've seen, and I got some more examples here. Okay, that I've listed out. So the argument presented above by Dr. Gipp in defense of the King James Bible's use of Easter in Acts 12:4 is by no means unique to his writings. The same or very similar arguments are found in a host of pro-King James literature. The following list is a mere sampling of volumes articulating similar arguments. Thomas Holland, Crown with Glory, Floyd Nolan Jones, which version is the Bible, D.A. Waite, defending the King James Bible, and then this King James Bible defined. Okay, I know a couple of the saints here in the assembly have that. If you go to the next page, notice how they define, there's a note at the bottom of the page in that King James Bible defined on Easter in Acts 12:4, and it says, "Ishtar, ancient pagan festival. Easter was originally the name of the pagan spring festival that occurred at about the same time as the Passover." Okay, that's what it says, right, Ron? All right, now that Bible was edited by D.A. Waite, the same guy who wrote the book above. Okay, so just to be clear about all those facts. So, in summation, the prevailing defense of Easter in Acts 12:4 in King James-only literature is based upon the following assumptions. One, the Jewish Passover had already what? Passed. And two, that Easter is referring to a pagan celebration that Herod, a pagan king, would have been observing. So Mike, yes, they are, I suppose fundamentally there's two different things.
So I said,
but they're,
I've seen guys argue, keep them separate. But
most of the time they're smushed together.
Okay.
So, mark well it. Now, there's a couple things that you need to sort of make sure you're paying attention to here. Okay. So mark well on this point, King James advocates agree with James R. White that Easter is pagan in origin, meaning an application. They both agree about that. Okay? White views this as justification for his position that Easter is a mistranslation of the Greek word Pascha, whereas King James only defend Easter because they believe that the context of Acts 12:4 points to a pagan festival that Herod was observing. So do both sides agree that that's pagan? Yeah. One side says that's a mistake, and the other side says, no, that's exactly what it needs to be based upon the timing of Passover and unleavened bread. Is everybody following that? Okay. So, for the record, and in the interest of full transparency, prior to 2007, while still the pastor of Westside Grace Church in Muskegon Heights, Michigan, I brought an Easter message teaching the view outlined by Gip above. So, I was given this book as an 18-year-old. I read it, and it seemed reasonable to me that that would be an explanation to defend why that should be what? Easter. Okay? So I accepted at the time Gip's teaching on the matter in sort of an uncritical way. I assumed he knew what he was talking about. It sounded reasonable to me, and so I thought it's true, and I sort of ran with it. All right? So I'm confessing my sins to you there, I suppose. My lack of Bereanness on that point. So that brings us then to the third point that I want to look at, and that is Easter exclusively pagan? Now, do both sides say yes? Yes, they do. One side says, exactly our point, that's why it has to be what? Easter. The other side says, that's what? That's a mistake, it's wrong. It shouldn't say that. Okay?
Not everyone does.
Most of them do. I've not seen any book or video by anybody that's not a modern version advocate that thinks Easter's okay. We're going to get to that next week. We're going to get to that next week.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to equal opportunity here. Okay. I'm going to give you more history on the detailed translation than you ever wanted probably next week. Okay. So is Easter exclusively pagan? An article on the King James Version Today's website titled Easter or Passover in Acts 12:4 first caused me to question the explanation provided by Dr. Gipp in the previous section. This article provides a framework for the discussion outlined in this section. While the KJV Today article does a fair job of highlighting the etymological history of the English word Easter, it is ultimately incomplete. The article says nothing about the historic connection in the English language between Easter and the Jewish Passover. Consequently, I do not agree with the article's overall conclusion that Easter in Acts 12:4 is referring to a Christian festival. Okay? So in this section, we're going to consider the following subpoints regarding the etymology of the English word Easter. First, we're going to look at the influence of Hyslop, Alexander Hyslop. Second, we'll look at the etymology of Easter. Third, we'll look at the Christian use of Easter. And last, we'll look at the connection between Easter and Passover. Okay? So, the influence of Alexander Hyslop. Exhibit A. 1853 book by Alexander Hyslop, The Two Babylons, or Papal Worship, proved to be the worship of Nimrod and his wife. Very popular book written in the mid-19th century. Very popular among fundamentalists in the 20th century, especially those who are anti-Catholic and view the Catholic Church as corrupt and guilty of all manner of sins and wickedness and all sorts of things. Very popular book in fundamentalism in the 20th century. Okay, the true utility of the King James Today article is found in that it serves to break the almost slavish connection between Easter and Ishtar Astarte in the minds of many believers on both sides of the textual debate. Okay? The connection between Easter and the Semitic goddess Ishtar or Astarte in the minds of modern Christians can be traced back to the publication of The Two Babylons by Alexander Hyslop in 1853. Hyslop, an outspoken critic of Roman Catholicism, falsely postulated an etymological relationship between Easter and Ishtar or Astarte based upon phonics. Phonetics. Easter, Ishtar, gotta be the same. Okay? So, look at the quote from Hyslop. He said, quote, this is quoting Hyslop, page 103. He said, "What means the term Easter itself? It is not a Christian name. It bears its Chaldean origin," that's Babylonian, Chaldean is Babylonian origin, "on the very forehead. Easter is nothing else than Astarte, one of the titles of Beltis, the Queen of Heaven, whose name is pronounced by the people of Nineveh, was evidently identical with that now in common use in this country. That name was found by Lanyard on the Assyrian monuments, is Ishtar." So what is Hyslop saying? He's saying that Easter has its etymological origin back to what? Ishtar and Astarte, the Semitic goddesses of the Babylonians. Okay? Now, let's be clear. What did Gip say? Where do you think Gip got the idea from? He got it from here. How do I know? I watched three videos of him saying that that's where he got it from. Okay? So, he, in the 19th century, is influencing him in the 20th century. You gotta understand the connection here on this point. Okay, so let's go back to the notes. According to the KJV Today's article, Easter and Ishtar/Astarte are not etymologically related. Quoting from the article, "While it is true that Ishtar, a form of Astarte, sounds similar to Easter, the two words are not etymologically related. Astarte in Hebrew," and then he gives, this name is derived from, and he gives the Hebrew word, which means increase or flock, "and Astarte is translated as flocks four times in the King James. Hence the name Astarte or Ishtar is a Semitic word related to animal fertility. This makes sense because Astarte was regarded as a goddess of fertility." Now he's talking, the King James Today article is talking about what these words meant when? In the Old Testament, right? In Hebrew, okay? Hyslop's false etymological connection between Easter and Ishtar/Astarte was only one of his mistakes. As we will see in the next subpoint, the true origin of Easter is connected with the Anglo-Saxon goddess Ostre. Number one, he misidentifies what the connection is. The English word Easter has nothing to do with the Semitic word. Absolutely nothing to do with it at all. That etymological connection has nothing to do with Astarte Ishtar. Not even at all. It has to do with something else that's derived out of Anglo-Saxon, which makes sense because it's English derived out of Anglo-Saxon.
Yes.
Okay? So, number one, Hyslop is wrong about the etymological history of the word. Okay? I gotta move quick here because we're running out of time already. I told you. Okay? More importantly, however, is his advancement of the notion, and this is the bigger point, that any word derived out of paganism mandates an absolute pagan meaning / connection in later modern usage. For example, if I make a dinner appointment for Thursday night, am I automatically worshiping the Norse god Thor, for whose name Thursday is derived?
I don't think so.
Okay, no. I'm just talking about what day of the week I'm going to meet someone for dinner. So, let me back off that for a minute. If you're going to make a big deal about all this stuff, you got to change the months you use, you got to change the days of the week, you got to change everything because it's all derived out of what? Paganism. Okay? So, let's just be honest about it. We got to be honest about where our language came from and what the true roots of it were. Okay? So, this highlights the true error of Hyslop is found in his confounding of a word's origin with its later / modern usage. Just because a given English word is of pagan origin does not mandate pagan meaning in modern usage. That's just a fact. Okay? Brian Tiegert is the author of an internet article titled Acts 12:4, Passover and Easter, in which he states the following regarding the heirs of Hyslop. He says, quote, "The idea that Easter is derived from Ishtar Astarte seems to come first or second hand from Alexander Hyslop's 1853 book, The Two Babylons. As far as I can see, Hyslop repeatedly makes the assertion of a connection between Easter and Astarte, but never provides any sources for his claim." I would second that. I read this thing a bunch of times looking for a source, and he never says what his source is. He's just connecting the two words because phonetically they sound what? The same. Okay? Where am I at? Oh yeah. What is entirely ironic is that Hyslop is not arguing that Easter was associated with Astarte at the time of Herod. His argument is that Easter was originally entirely Christian, but was corrupted by the Roman Catholic Church, incorporating elements of pagan religions, including Astarte, in the 5th century A.D., long after Herod was. So, is Hyslop, even if Hyslop were right, is he even making the point that Gip needs him to make his point? No. Is everybody with that? I know I'm talking fast, but I'm trying to finish. Okay? So I'm at the bottom. Despite this alleged connection of Astarte with Easter, many scholars now think this connection is a false etymology, meaning that it is only assumed because of the similar sounds between Easter and Astarte. Instead, the name Easter is probably derived from the Anglo-Saxon pagan goddess post-dating Herod of Aster. So, I mean, he's making the point here that even if that is pagan, it's got nothing to do with what's going on in Acts 12:4. Okay? Once Hyslop connected Easter and Ishtar/Astarte, it was picked up on by Protestants and fundamental believers and advanced in an uncritical manner. In this way, the influence of Hyslop looms large over the entire discussion of Easter in Acts 12:4. Okay? So if Easter is not connected with Astarte and Ishtar, then the question should be, okay, well then, where is it? Where did it come from? The etymology of Easter, on the other hand, has nothing to do with flocks or animal fertility, according to the KJV today. Easter, Ostern in German, is a Germanic word derived from the word East, or Ost in German. The Online Etymological Dictionary is quoted in support. It says, Old English East, East, Easterly, Eastward, from Proto-Germanic Austo, Austra, East, toward the sunrise. And you can go through all the different derivatives there that are in German. I'm not going to read all of them to you. But the bottom line is, does that word have anything to do with Ishtar and Astarte? Does the English word Easter have anything to do with Ishtar and Astarte? No. Okay? The Oxford English Dictionary, the recognized authority on the history of the English language, is in complete agreement with the Online Etymological Dictionary as to the etymology of the English word Easter. Interested parties are encouraged to consult Appendix A on page 13 to read it. So if you just leaf back, we're not going to look at it, but if you go back to page 13, you will see that I have provided for you the entire entry on page 13 of the etymological history of the word Easter for your own edification, because I knew you wanted to have it. Okay? No, because I needed to academically prove my point and I needed to put it in there so that you could see that I was telling you the truth. Okay? Well, I had to screenshot it and I couldn't really get it any bigger, so you might have to use a magnifying glass. Okay? So, let's go to the next point. There is nothing in East, the word East, to suggest animal fertility. Hence, the word has nothing to do with Astarte or Ishtar. Relating the Germanic word Easter to the Semitic word Ishtar is as fallacious as related the English word baby to the Semitic word Babylon, according to the King James Version today's article. Okay? Today, east refers to the direction from which the sun rises. The direction of east goes by that name because the Saxon word east meant dawn, sunrise, or morning. Therefore, etymologically, Easter basically means dawn. According to the Venerable Bede, the Old English word for the month of April is, and you can see it in there, Ostermond, or Easter what? Month. Okay? Astrae came from the name of a Saxon spring fertility goddess who went by that name. Now, here's the point. Does the word Easter still connect to something pagan?
Yes.
Does it connect to Astarte and whatever that goddess's name is from the Old Testament? No. It's connecting to something that is derived out of Anglo-Saxonism. Okay? It still has a pagan origin, but let's go on. Wow, I went through that whole thing in 4 minutes. Christian use of Easter. The fact that a Saxon goddess went by the name Astrae or Ostrae does not mean that Easter is a pagan word. Those who hold this myth make it sound as if there was once a goddess with a certain name and Saxon Christians simply took the name arbitrarily without any biblical basis. If, for example, the pagans worshiped a goddess by the name of Sally, and the Christians today refer to the day of the Lord's resurrection as Sally, then surely we would have a problem. But that is not the case. For Saxon Christians, using Easter as the name of the day of the Lord's resurrection, as Easter was a descriptive word that referred to the dawn or sunrise, we can understand how both pagans and Christians wished to use the word east for their respective purposes. Pagans wished to worship a goddess of sunrise, so they call her Ostrae. Christians, on the other hand, wished to worship and celebrate a very special dawn, so they called the day what? Easter, okay? The Bible describes Christ's resurrection as being discovered in the morning, at dawn, at the rising of the sun. One could view the resurrection morning as dawn par excellence. And I'll explain what that means in a minute. But look at Matthew 28:1. As it began to what? Dawn toward the first day of the week. Mark 16:2. And very early in the morning, the first day of the week, they came unto the sepulchre at the rising of what?
The sun.
Luke 24:1. Now upon the first day of the week, very early when? In the morning. So listen, if the word Easter essentially just equals what? Dawn. Well, when was the resurrected body of Jesus, when was the empty sepulchre discovered according to the New Testament? Dawn. At the rising of the sun. So on and so forth, right? So, a Anglo-Saxon Christian who wants to describe that event can take that word and what? Use it to describe what they are meaning to what? To describe. Okay? Per the OED, par excellence means by virtue of special excellence or manifest superiority, preeminently, supremely, above all. There have been many dawns throughout history, but that special dawn on the day of the resurrection is deserving of that noun more than any other. Okay? We often refer to notable biblical events using par excellence nouns such as the fall, the flood, the exodus, the exile, the advent, the cross, etc. Easter is the Anglo-Saxon word for this greatest dawn in all of history. By way of, how do you say that word? Meadow, whatever. This term, which refers to dawn of the resurrection, can be referred to the entire day of the resurrection. So, this word has nothing to do with Astarte. This word has nothing to do with Ishtar. This word has something to do with something that is derived out of Anglo-Saxonism. That Anglo-Saxon Christians took that word and used it to describe the event that they read about in their Bible as the resurrection of Jesus that happened at the rising of what? The sun. Is everybody with that? Now I know this is totally different than anything you've ever heard before. But you got to just bear with me. Because it's going to get even more different. The imagery of the now think about this. The imagery of dawn and the rising of the sun is not reserved to the morning of Christ's bodily resurrection from the dead. The Scriptures utilize the same imagery to describe the second advent of the Lord Jesus Christ back to earth. Isaiah 61 verses 1 through 3 refer to the second coming as the brightness of thy what? Rising. Malachi chapter 4 verse 2 talks about the but unto them that fear my name shall the sun, capital S-U-N, of righteousness do what? Arise with healing in his wings. Luke chapter 1 talks about whereby the day spring from on high hath visited us, referring to Christ. 2 Peter chapter 1 verse 19 talks about until the day dawn and the day star arise in your hearts. And finally, Revelation 22 verse 16 refers to Jesus as the root and offspring of David and the bright and morning what? Star. Folks, are there reasons in your English Bible for Easter to be an appropriately used term to describe an event in your Bible? And not have it have anything to do with what? Easter eggs and bunnies and Ash Astarte and human sacrifice and blood eggs and all this other stuff. Okay? Now, I'm just going to keep going. Some Christians try to avoid anything that has anything to do with sunrise imagery, presuming that it is pagan. Yet God in His Word compares Christ's second coming to the rising of the sun, capital S-U-N. The word Easter, which is with its connotation of sunrise, pays tribute to the biblical imagery of Christ as the Son of Righteousness, Malachi 4:2. The Old West Saxon version of the Gospel of Luke translates the word as Easterdale, which is the Saxon word for east sunrise. And they do that there in Luke chapter 1 verse 78. So there is a historical reference for you of that exact thing happening to describe something biblical. Is everybody with that? So Easter is etymologically related to east, the direction that refers to the rising of our Lord from the dead. This connection between the eastern direction and the resurrection makes some Christians nervous about a possible pagan influence. However, there is no reason for such concern because this connection between the eastern direction and the verb to rise is found in the New Testament itself. The Greek verb, anatelo, means to rise. And this is the word that is translated as arise in the above passage in 2 Peter chapter 1 verse 19. Go back up to the top of page 10 and look at 2 Peter chapter 1 verse 19. Look at what I have highlighted there. The day star what? That same word is there, and it means arise. It means what? It means dawn. Okay? So, biblically, there is no connection between the eastern direction and the verb to rise. Wait, did I say that right? There is a connection between the eastern direction and the verb to rise, even in the language of the New Testament. The writers of the New Testament did not avoid using this verb, despite its derived form, derived from the Greek word for east. Excuse me. So, I need to finish this point. Despite any explanation that Easter is derived from a generic Saxon word for the dawn, it is not pagan in and of itself, and the mere possibility that a goddess went by the name of Ostre appears to scare some Christians into avoiding the word Easter. These Christians need to realize that pagans should not be given monopoly over valid words in the English lexicon. See King James Version today, blah, blah, blah. We just have to admit that the English language is a language of a people who were once pagan and that there were many vestiges of pagan etymology in English. Also to be noted is the irony that this word Ishtar, which some Christians wish to avoid, appears to be related to Esther, which is the name of an entire book of your old Holy Bible. Esther lived in a pagan culture and was given a pagan name, as with Mordecai, which is related to the pagan god Marduk. While it has been demonstrated that Easter has nothing to do with Ishtar, the Bible itself shows that God can redeem a name even if it is in fact related to what? Folks, all this stuff is a bunch of smoke and mirrors that never was a big deal until somebody what? Made it one. Is everybody with that? Now, I know that's going to require some processing on your part, but I need to finish this. The connection between... Now, ooh, here we go. It's going to get thick in here, I tell you what. The connection between Easter and Passover. Now, I've said to you, at Acts 12:4, I don't think it's talking about a pagan festival. And I don't think it's talking about a Christian one. Holiday, I think it's talking about the Jewish one. Passover. In addition to being used as a reference to the day / dawn of Christ's resurrection, Easter has a long history of being used as a reference to the Jewish Passover, according to the Oxford English Dictionary. The KJV Today's article completely overlooks this important and extremely relevant fact. So that's where I stop following what I could prove out of that article. Okay? The second definition provided for Easter in the OED reads as follows. 2 equals Passover, noun, number 1. So let's just stop there. What did the dictionary just tell you Easter equals? The dictionary just told you that Easter can equal what? Passover. Just told you that. Okay? Therefore, the OED states that the second definition of Easter is equal to the first definition of Passover. The first definition of Passover reads as follows. The major Jewish spring festival, which commemorates the liberation of the people of Israel from Egyptian bondage, lasting 7 days in Israel, or 8 nights in the diaspora, from the 15th day of what? Now think about that. The dictionary just told you that Easter and Passover mean what? The same thing. Isn't it funny how Gip or White or nobody else told you this? Nobody else told you this. Because nobody bothered to look. Okay? The Middle English Dictionary. So, okay, oh Pastor, that's Oxford. Okay, let's go back to Middle English. We can do that. The Middle English Dictionary confirms this by offering the following as its second definition for Easter. Equals Jewish what? Passover. Therefore, ample historical evidence exists from a host of English language resources that Easter was used to refer to the Jewish feast day before the word Passover was even invented by Tyndale in 1530. Folks, that means that this meant Passover before that word even what? Existed. This word is not invented by Tyndale until 1530. So that means people were referring to the Jewish Passover as what? Easter for hundreds of years before Tyndale even came up with that word Passover. Now, if you look at your notes, Appendix B, on page 14, I've given you every dictionary entry that you need to look at to corroborate what I'm saying. Okay? Wow. We got to quit, but I got a conclusion. I'm not going to have any energy to teach service. So, Tom, you're going to have to preach, okay? So, I'm telling you right there, that this word cannot be proven to exist until Tyndale invents the word in 1530. Which means, for hundreds of years, people were referring to the Jewish Passover as what? Easter. Before Tyndale even invents the word what? Passover. Now, don't you think that's probably a relevant point? It would seem like that's an extremely what? Relevant point. Okay? But more than that, go to Luke 22. Gip said, that no other day is ever referred to as Passover than what day?
The
14th. Luke 22, verse 1. Now the feast of what? Unleavened bread drew nigh. Which is also called what? Gift said that he was arrested after what? Passover. And that the only day in your Bible that's ever referred to as Passover is what day? Apparently he didn't read Luke 22:1. Because Luke 22:1 calls the whole thing what? Passover. And I just proved to you that Easter meant what? Passover. So when those translators had Easter in Acts 12:4, they meant to say, what were they saying? They were saying Passover. Oh, but Brother Ross, why did they do that? Well, let's think about that. What is the base text for that 1611 Bible? That 1611, but the base text for that was a bishop's Bible. If I go look up Acts 12:4 in a bishop's Bible, guess what they had?
Easter.
The smoke and mirrors are going away here, folks. This word meant Passover before Passover was even invented, and the Bible clearly says that this entire thing, including the days of unleavened bread, can be referred to as what? Passover. So, wow, we haven't been this late in a long time, Norm. You're going to have fun slicing that video together. Sorry about that. So, I got to finish. So while there is no doubt, now listen, I'm admitting this, okay? While there's no doubt that many practices associated with the current cultural celebration known as Easter are pagan in origin, the word itself is not inextricably tied to paganism as many have asserted. I'm not denying the fact that Easter bunnies and all this business out here have nothing to do with anything in the what? In the Bible, okay? In order for one to truly understand the motives of the King James translators in rendering Pascha as Easter in Acts 12:4, the slavish connection between the English word Easter and paganism must be broken as an important first step. Let the 1611 King James Bible stand as a case in point. If the King James translators understood Easter to be a reference to a pagan festival in Acts 12:4, they did not. Why did they include a table in the front of the 1611 to help the reader identify how to find Easter forever? There it is right there. 1611 reprint says at the top, a chart for how to find what? So they obviously knew that Easter had a different meaning necessarily than an exclusively what? Pagan meaning, or they wouldn't have told everybody how to find the date for what? Easter forever. I gotta quit. Translating nearly 200 years before Hyslop, the King James translators apparently knew something about the English word Easter that Hyslop didn't know. If they thought Easter were exclusively pagan, they certainly would not have included such a table in the front of their translation. Well, the KJV Today article is excellent in terms of highlighting the etymological history of the English word Easter. I do not agree with their overall conclusion about the meaning of Easter in Acts 12:4. Luke is not referring to the Christian festival of Easter, but to the Jewish feast day of Passover, as we will demonstrate next week when we look at point 4, Easter in the English Bible, a brief history of translation. Not only does the English word Easter refer to the morning of the resurrection, but it was also used interchangeably with the word Passover to refer to the Jewish what? Festival. As we conclude this lesson, here are a couple of points for you to ponder. Number one, why did Samuel C. Gipp, an outspoken proponent of the 1611, he's a big 1611, brother, 1611. Mike knows what I'm talking about. Why did he not take into account the above table found therein for calculating the date of Easter when he was explaining the meaning of the word? And number two, recall from the beginning that James White also embraced the notion that Easter was an exclusively pagan word and therefore not appropriate translation of Pascha in Acts 12:4. Why does White, an opponent of Gipps, not refute the King James only understanding of the word Easter based upon a more accurate etymological history of the word? It turns out that the scholars on both sides of the textual debate have not been very scholarly. We got to quit. We're 10 minutes past. Todd is not going to be here, so I need your help with the service. All right, we got to quit though.